Life coaching and discovery. Inspiration with an invitation to learn from a self-discovery guide. Mark is passionate about you making positive changes in your life so that it becomes a vibrant, ongoing journey of growth and discovery. Welcome to the Inspire Possibility Show. Now, here's your host, Mark Susnow.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mark Susnow, and you're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, a production of InspirePossibility.com, your resource for creating new possibilities in your life. There's no better time than now to begin. You're the one you've been waiting for. But sometimes we just need some inspiration and encouragement. And with that in mind, each week I invite individuals whom I consider cutting-edge thought leaders, people who are committed to making a difference in the world and in our lives, who expand our perception of what we might think is possible, to have a conversation with me and discuss what they're up to and what moves them. And with that in mind, I invited Lily Hill, the author of the Amazon number one bestseller, The Body Love Manual. I mean, how's that for a title? Is that intriguing? And her big thing is she talks about learning to love the body you have while you're trying to create the body you want. And what intrigued me about that is so often, you know, we have a goal we want to get to or a concept of something we want to create in our life, and we become obsessed by it, and we forget to kind of, as they say, smell the roses of what we have now. So, welcome, Lily.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be on. And you know, my favorite thing to talk about is the concept of self-love as a means of personal and social transformation. And body love's a part of that because our self is living in the body.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like that. I mean, I kind of, the self-love idea, I always talk about being your best friend. I mean, we're so good with other people, right? We're so good with other people, but we're not that way with ourselves. And so how did you get into the work you did? How did you come up with learning to love yourself? I'm sure that, I don't think you were born with this idea. Maybe you were, but I know I have a sense that it took you a while to get here. So could you kind of share with the listeners your journey?
You're absolutely correct. I'd be happy to, because I think very few people are taught from an early age to love ourselves. In fact, not only in our families of origin, but also in our culture, and it's accidental, we get the message that we're not good enough or we're unlovable. Although my journey was interesting in that my whole relationship with my body and myself didn't become really conflicted until I was about 18 years old. I was asked out on a date by a handsome college freshman, and I was a senior in high school, and we were going to the beach, and I decided to get a new bathing suit. So I went into a department store and tried on the bathing suit, and I looked in the mirror, and I had my first negative body thought. I thought, I have cellulite, and he's not going to be attracted to me. So I panicked a little bit. And I thought, I better go on a diet.
You did pretty good, actually. You didn't have that till you were 18, that experience.
Yeah, I do. I consider that to be a real blessing, because it's, even having had it from 18 to 30, it's not only a weight on the body, but it's a weight on the mind. And it's a constant thought in your head. When you have poor body image or poor self-esteem issues, it shows up every single day like an unwanted guest. And after I went on that date, or actually prior to the date, I was so worried about what I look like that I decided, all right, I'm going to go on an extreme diet and lose weight fast, because the date's just a few days away. So I went on a all-vegetable diet, which triggered in me this compulsion around food that that I didn't know that I could move beyond. It's basically a dieter's mentality. And one of the things that I'm passionate about, I'm known as the anti-diet queen because I talk about the dangers of dieting. They really are the worst thing you can do if you want to lose weight. This is not just me saying it. Studies
so
show in 95 to 90.
Yeah, so tell me how you more on your on this concept that you're the anti-diet queen, that it's the worst thing you can do if you want to lose weight. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about that?
So when you go on a diet, basically when you overly restrict your calories, you create this internal upset in your body. It's a survival mechanism. So when you overly reduce your calories, your body goes into a kind of a panic mode, which just kind of feels like low-grade discomfort. And that discomfort is part of why we start to obsess over food, because what we're denying ourselves, our mind starts to hyper-focus on. Again, this goes back to our biology from hundreds of thousands of years. So when you go on a diet, you create an unnatural obsession with food almost immediately. Most people that go on a diet talk about, well, I lasted a couple days and then I binge ate because I was just so tired of depriving myself. So the state of internal upset gets very extreme, and so people start, again, involuntarily and automatically reaching for food even when they're not hungry. But it goes beyond that because when you go on a diet and you overly restrict your calories, what happens is, again, it goes back to your biology, it makes it so that your body reduces your metabolism to hold on to the food that you have. So after one diet, you can reduce your metabolism as much as 40%, and it can take up to a year to recover.
Wow.
So diets are the worst thing you could possibly do if you want to lose weight. So, but there aren't very few people out there talking about it.
Yeah, so let me see if I understand correctly. The theory is that when you say you reduce your metabolism about 40%, and what that means is you burn fewer calories and fewer fat. Is that the idea?
That's it.
So it's almost the opposite of what you want. If your system's not burning the calories as quickly, then that's the idea?
That's exactly the idea. And this should be mainstream advice because we have an obesity epidemic, and even the obesity experts agree that dieting is not the way to go, but they don't know what else to suggest to people other than, you know, eat healthy foods and exercise. There's a growing movement, thank heavens, around the mental side of weight loss and a return to natural and intuitive eating, but it's such a small conversation, and everywhere you look, there's advertisements for a diet or get lose weight fast, and that's so alluring because none of us want to take the harder road, you know, of literally training ourselves mentally to be able to eat in harmony with our body rather than out of stress or overwhelm or depression or habit.
And why do I think that's what you want to talk about, what you're passionate about?
That's exactly right.
Why do I think that?
I think because I suffered so intensely for so many years because no one told me that diets don't work until I finally read a book called Diets Don't Work. And even after I read the book and it gave me this information, I still would return to dieting because it was just too hard to manage my mindsets. I just had too much stress going on. I was very insecure. The depression and all of those in combination made me not think logically. I knew logically diets didn't work. I couldn't stick with one for longer than a few days. You know, I think my first diet I stayed on for a few weeks, but after that, I couldn't even stay on for a few days. The compulsion became so extreme. So I'd sit in front of the television set for hours eating because I couldn't shut down that unkind mind and that untamed mind, the monkey mind, the ego, whatever you want to call it. Until you can shut that down, those emotional appetites will continue to make you eat food you're not physically hungry for. And that's how excess weight is gained, and that's because it's so difficult to lose, because no one wants to take, or it's very hard to convince people to take, the longer path, but that actually leads to permanent weight loss and a lack of obsession around food.
And is that what your book is about, your body love manual?
Yep. And I probably didn't name it properly in retrospect, because nobody's Googling body love as a means to losing weight. Uh-huh. They're Googling, you know, lose uh-huh. weight fast and instant weight loss. But uh-huh. what I realized is that the more I hated my body uh-huh. and myself for not being able to lose weight, the more upset uh-huh. I became, the more I started to drop excess cortisol in my bloodstream, stress hormones that made me reach more for uh-huh. food. So a part of what I teach people, what the book teaches people in my online program, Healthy Mind, Healthy Weight, I teach them how to shut that negative part of their mind down. Because once you have control over what you're thinking, you'll have more control over whether or not you're going to choose to eat. But before then, it's incredibly hard to shut the mind down. That's why nobody wants to meditate, because we get mm-hmm. to see how crazy our minds are, and it's upsetting.
Right.
But it's
so
part
what
of
you're
mastering
saying,
the mind.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that shutting the mind down is the first step toward having a better relationship to your body and food.
Shutting down the untamed mind. Yeah, and uh-huh. shutting down there. Think of it as two voices in your head, two parts of your mind. Uh-huh. You've got the untamed mind. This is the one that's going to make you eat more than you want, more than
right.
you're really physically hungry for. It makes you worry about the future, right? All these terrible things that could happen in the future. Makes you
mm-hmm.
feel regret about the past.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you judge yourself, judge other people, and resist
mm-hmm.
your circumstances. So let's say you're in traffic. Well, you can't
uh-huh.
change traffic, but the mind will start
right.
to go crazy around that. And once
mm-hmm.
you learn how to control the mind, then you can start to think thoughts that will get you what you want versus what you don't want.
Okay. I kind of think of that as your VOJ, your voice of judgment.
Voice
that
of judgment,
voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so what's your strategy to silence that voice?
So the very first component of it is recognizing what that voice is saying to you every day. So
uh-huh.
Many of us have already read the studies that talk about the fact that we're thinking 30 to 60,000 thoughts a day, and
right.
90 to 95% of those thoughts are some iteration of a thought you had yesterday or the day before, right? And
uh-huh.
studies show that 77% of them are negative. Now, most of us think positively. If you had asked me, even when I was at the height of my eating disorder, when I couldn't stop thinking about food and I was stressed and depressed,
mm-hmm.
I would have told you that I was a positive thinker. But once I started to really become aware of how I was thinking, I was stunned at how many of my thoughts were from that untamed mind. And it wasn't until I really started to map out, what am I thinking about every single day? How many of my thoughts are positive? Why am I thinking these thoughts that I don't want to think? Until I started to recognize the thoughts that were making me over and over again think the same thought and reach for food to comfort myself, I couldn't get out of the spiral. So becoming aware of how you think.
Yeah. Lily, how long ago was this that you were thinking like that?
So it was from 18 to 30, and I'm 51
uh-huh.
now. So
uh-huh.
it's been about 21 years since I've been free of the compulsivity around food.
Uh-huh.
And free of 65 pounds of weight without dieting. And that's
uh-huh.
actually the best thing, is being free of the untamed mind, though. I would rather
uh-huh.
be carrying excess weight and not have to listen to that constant voice of judgment.
Uh-huh. So tell me how you went around to changing this voice of judgment. How did your shift come about? What were the steps? Because I think a lot of people want to know. They go, well, I've done this my whole life, and how am I going to change it? It's easier. Well, you changed it. Well, what about me? What can I do to change this pattern? Because it sounds like it's some subconscious, unconscious pattern that you're not even aware of in the beginning, like you're saying. And how do you break that loop? How do you get out of that?
Well, the whole key is, I call it bombarding the untamed mind. So once you become aware of how you're thinking, and you recognize
uh-huh.
the negative thoughts, the ones that are holding you back, the ones that are self-denigrating or negative or fear-based,
mm-hmm.
once you know that, that doesn't mean they're going to stop. That's step one. That's 50%. Like, okay, I get it. I'm thinking more negatively than I want to. I'm thinking in a way that doesn't serve me. And you start to recognize that one of the questions I ask myself is this my thought? Is this a thought I want to think? And if the answer to that is no, then I know it's the untamed mind. I know that it's
mm-hmm.
an involuntary thought. because we're Eckhart Tolle speaks to the fact that we're all lost in thought. We're addicted to thinking. We don't stop to really pay close attention to our thoughts every single day because we're all so busy and overwhelmed.
Right.
So I ask myself, is this a thought that I want to think? And if the answer is no, then I know it's my untamed mind, and I start to turn that thought around to a thought that moves me in the direction that I want to go, a thought that's positive. From the tamed mind, which is positive, it's rational, it comes up with solutions to problems, it's the wise inner professor, it's the thoughts of your soul, and those move you towards what you want, being who you want to be, and acting in ways that make you proud and moving towards your goals and your vision for your life. So in order to turn that down, the observation of the thought, witness consciousness, it's something that's been spoken of for by all of the great thought leaders that I've ever studied under. And then it goes beyond that, though, in terms of if you want to overcome a ingrained thought process, you have to bombard your mind by every day focusing on retraining the mind. Now, most people go, oh my God, that sounds so exhausting. I don't know where to start. And it's not exhausting if you're just taking one thought at a time. It's just the thought you're thinking right now. It's present moment awareness. So the training around the mind allows you to relax into the present moment and then start to direct your thoughts rather than being hijacked by the untamed mind, which hijacks your consciousness and makes you, again, think thoughts that make you miserable. So that's
Lily,
part of the reason I – yes.
So give me an example of, say, some thoughts you had and how you did this process and changing them. How you went ahead, you identified some negative thoughts, you bombarded them. Let me explain to us the process of how you did this, what they were, and how you went about changing them. Because I think that's really helps us get more clarity about what's actually
going on.
Great
idea. Yeah. So some of the thoughts that I think on a regular basis, a daily basis, you look horrible. No one's ever going to love you at this weight. Something's wrong with you. Get a hold of yourself. You've got to stick to your diet. You've got a problem. It's very unkind. It was a very unkind voice. So listening to those thoughts naturally made me upset, and then I literally couldn't stop myself from moving towards the food. I wanted to lose weight more than I wanted to win the lottery, and I still could not until I learned how to shut that mind down. I was literally a victim of it. So we're all victims of our thought processes. There's very little emotional education out there. So I tell people that if you want to move beyond a pattern, you have to be paying attention to it every single day. And I always say, get support, because without support, it's going to be at least 10 times harder. It's going to be challenging even with support to change the way you think. But without support, it's going to take you 10 times longer. And if you get support right away, you'll start feeling better right away because you know you're not alone. And you'll be getting to unearth those thoughts that some of us are embarrassed about. We don't want to think those negative thoughts. We don't want to tell people, I think I'm ugly or nobody's going to love me. They're embarrassing to us. But freedom comes by being brave enough to speak out your biggest fears so that you can then start to tackle them.
So identifying them, expressing them. So again, you have this idea, somebody has this idea, oh, I look ugly. So how do they go about? I mean, what do they do? They hear that voice, or I'm not looking good, I look old, or whatever it is. What do they do? They identify, and then what do they do? You say, what if they don't get help? What if they don't, have the means to get help? I mean, what can they do on their own?
So there are so many resources out there. If you just Google, positive thinking, you'll start to, there are so many different takes on it. You can automatically go to a resource that'll train you in thinking more positively. I have
So let me ask you a question here. So do you think it really comes down to positive thinking?
That's a huge
part of it. Is that what you're saying?
It's not just positive thinking. Positive thinking is a huge piece of it, but it's rational thinking. And rational thinking is usually positive. So a rational thought would be, I'm not living at my natural weight. And I know that's because I'm eating to take care of myself. So therefore, I'm going to start to tune into my physical appetites and eat when I'm hungry versus bored or stressed. And that'll allow me to reach my natural weight. But it hasn't done me any good to think negatively about myself, so I'm not going to think that way. It's a very reasonable line of thinking. The untamed mind is very unreasonable, and it drags us backwards. So it's identifying the thought as yes.
So what I want to know is, how do people get your book? If they want to get your book, The Love Body Manual.
What I'd recommend is I have the book, The Body Love Manual, which is available on Amazon. But for those out there that are struggling every single day with compulsivity around food, HealthyMindHealthyWeight.com is my online program. Because when you want to bombard the mind with a new way of thinking, if you want to get over compulsivity around food and you want to lose weight, you have to be training in it every single day. So this is a training in overcoming overeating. It's behavioral modification. It's a training, and if you're listening to it every day and you're using the resources on the site and you're really paying close attention to it for a few months, then you can be free for a lifetime. But if you're just listening to the same voice every single day, you can stay stuck for a lifetime.
Right. So could you say that link again for the listeners?
Yes. HealthyMindHealthyWeight.com is the site. However, for your listeners, if they are logging in today, I have a special. So the program is $397 for the – but if they log in using MasterYourMindMasterYourWeight.com, /special, they can get the program today for $97 because I want as many people as possible to have access to it. It's a completely different link, masteryourmindmasteryourweight.com/special, and they'll be able to get it for $97. And it's priceless because it's what took me from a woman who was 65 pounds overweight and compulsive around food to a woman who loves her body and has a very healthy relationship with food, and I didn't think that was possible. It feels like a triple miracle.
Uh-huh. Wow. So, and are you available? Do you do, like, workshops in person, too? I saw that. Do you do, like, in-person workshops or one-on-one coaching?
I do. I work with men and women, and I do it online and by Skype, you know, if they want to, because the online program is fantastic. And having support, having a person there who's also your biggest cheerleader and support system, just, again, makes it easier. It just makes everything easier. And easy is, you're going to want a lot of that because taming that untamed mind is going to be the hardest thing you ever do, but it's going to be the most important thing you ever do because it's going to make the rest of your life more of what you want it to be. It's literally the most important thing all of us could be doing is learning to master our mind and care about ourselves and become our own best friend, as you said.
Mm-hmm. So master the mind, tame the wild mind,
Exactly. Exactly.
That
it's tameable, but
some,
it takes some work.
Yeah.
It's like a wild horse. You're not going to tame a wild horse overnight.
I kind of refer to it sometimes as that, you know, the negative loop we have is sometimes you feel like you have a life sentence to suffering. You know? So
it has been for most people, you know, when you think about it. Most people we know, even though they're, many of them are very positive, wonderful people, we don't know what's going on in other people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got an obesity pandemic. So if you're thinking negatively, you're more likely to be eating involuntarily when you're not hungry. It's an addiction. I was a foodaholic, and we've got 2/3 of our countries the same, and it's a pandemic. It's all over the world now.
Right. Yeah. My sense about you is that what your message is that obesity is just one symptom of an underlying issue of really about self-esteem, about loving ourselves.
Yeah, I think that's a large part of it. And bodies are beautiful at every weight. That's why I wrote the Body Love Manual. I encourage body love.
Mm-hmm.
And part of loving your body is listening to it and not feeding it if it's not hungry. You know, I talk about, you know, thinking of your body like a pet. You wouldn't keep giving your pet extra food if your pet was already full. But mm-hmm. we've moved into a state of mind now where we talk ourselves out of living at our healthiest weight because there's a part of our mind that says, oh, I can't do it. So we give up on ourselves rather than saying, you know, this isn't about dieting. This is about eating, and the program teaches you how to basically eat naturally again, like you did when you were a child. Most of us ate when we mm-hmm. were hungry. We stopped when we were satisfied. So that's a huge part of it, is getting back to that natural, intuitive eating. And you don't have to diet. I eat all my favorite foods in losing the weight. Everything mm-hmm. I love, I ate. I just learned moderate eating. So this is a training in moderate eating.
So let me, you know, another question I have is you were saying about the Body Love Manual. You said when you gave it a title, you were saying you misnamed it. And yeah. what I'm wondering is if you were going to, let's say, do a new edition and you came up with a new title, what would that new title be?
It would probably be Healthy Mind, Healthy Weight. You know, because loving your body is a huge part of getting to your natural weight, but it's more than that. It's if you've got the mindset down, then you can love your body and you can respect yourself mm-hmm. and you can create circumstances mm-hmm. in your life that are joyful. So it's more mm-hmm. the comprehensive. It's more the umbrella. Loving your body is more is easier to do when you've got your mind on your team.
Mhm. Mhm. I wonder if there's a way to kind of just rename it. Since you brought it up, I'm just thinking that why not just reissue it and make that your title and use the other one as your subtitle? Because it sounds like that's really what you're saying, and at least it is now. And if you're saying, well, I mean, I'm just thinking maybe now, because I know when I wrote my first book, I started to, later on, my thoughts evolved, and some things I had, you know, a different terms of what was more important. Some of my thoughts shifted, and it sounds like maybe for you that's happening. So why not do that? And
I think
it's
a great
really
idea.
What you're most passionate about. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I'll put it on my to-do list, and
right.
I'll have to go in and do a few. I'll have to go do a few tweaks on the book for the Kindle edition, but. Yeah, I think that it's important because, you know, body love, to love our bodies, though, when you think about it, it's a very respectful thing to do because our bodies, and part of what I talk about in the book is that our bodies are miracles. Our bodies are not the problem when it comes to excess weight. It's the mind, because our bodies will say, please stop eating, but our mind will say, keep eating, this tastes good, rather than mm-hmm. I'm going to feel sick if I eat too much. So our bodies are innocent victims to our emotions that come from a mind that's untrained. And
mm-hmm.
I think if we had kids training in this from an early age, imagine what it would have been like to know how to control your thoughts from a very early age. We could help the future generations to avoid so much heartache that comes from judging ourselves and worrying all the time. And, you know, this generation is dealing with a whole new level of intensity because of technology. It's disconnecting them from their bodies even more.
It is. So I always like to ask my guests, what's Lily Hills up to right now?
Well, I'm trying to move the online program into the corporate arena because healthcare costs related to obesity are huge within corporate America. So they've got most of their programs are focused on, they're usually using the dieters model, which is we spoke about earlier, is mm-hmm. is making their employees more overweight and more upset. So I'm trying to move it into the corporate arena. And then on the side, I am writing another book on
All
powerful
right.
thoughts that thought shots, you know, basically thoughts that will make you feel better instantly, because when we reach for food and we're not hungry, it's because we're thinking negative thoughts. But if you start thinking positive thoughts, you feel better and you start releasing serotonin and dopamine into your bloodstream, the feel-good chemicals, and then you won't need to reach for food to make you feel better. You can feel better based on what you're thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lily, thanks for being the guest on the Inspire Possibility Show.
Thank you.
I was intrigued by your title, and I knew we'd have a great conversation. I could just tell. And,
it went so fast. I feel like we've been on for 5 minutes.
I know. It did go really fast, huh?
Yeah, I
think what you're doing is great, and I want to thank you for your courage to recognize your dissatisfaction at a certain point of your life, and your courage really to change and to kind of grow into this new role, this new person, and then share your story with many people that you're doing on a daily basis. So I want to, you know, acknowledge you for your courage and thank you for your commitment for being Lily Hills.
Well, I'm grateful, and I care deeply about helping the people that are struggling the way that I did. So it's a privilege to do this work, and thank you for giving me the time to talk about it, because it really is. It's something that I want to help as many people as possible in my lifetime. So thank you for allowing me to be on your show.
Well, thanks again, and I want to remind our listeners, they've been listening to the Inspire Possibility Show. Our guest today was Lily Hills, the author of the Amazon number one bestseller, The Body Love Manual. And next week, we're going to have another fascinating guest. And so tune in to the Inspire Possibility Show and join in, and we'll talk with you next week. Until then, journey on.
As a life coach and life discovery guide, Mark made his career change in 2001. The lessons, insights, and unique questions are provided for you in the book Dancing on the River, Navigating Life's Changes. Go to Amazon.com now and buy a copy. And tune in to Inspire Possibilities Show on PBS Radio every other Wednesday, 6 p.m. Station 1. Do you ever feel there is more to life than what you are currently experiencing? Are you basically stuck in a dead-end career job, or perhaps reeling from a toxic relationship? Everyone faces deep challenges in their life. That's why everyone needs a life discovery guide. Meet Mark Susnow of InspirePossibility.com and get inspired. Let Mark journey with you and show you how to navigate life's challenges as a mentor, as a guide, as a friend with immense energy to dynamically change your world. Schedule your complimentary coaching session with Mark Susnow now by visiting InspirePossibility.com and clicking Contact. You have nothing to lose and only inspiration to gain. Visit InspirePossibilities.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark Susnow, and you're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, the show that makes a difference. And with that in mind, each week I invite people to have a conversation with me, people that I consider cutting-edge thought leaders, most of whom have written books that can kind of change how we think, how we see life, and to present us with possibilities that perhaps we hadn't considered before. And I know the word meditation is a word that is in today's world is fairly common. It's not like a new concept. And at one time it was back in the 70s, but today more and more people meditate, and there's a lot of research on it. And I have one of those people who's written two books on meditation. He's here on the line. He's Dr. Norman Rosenthal. He has a new book called Supermind, and he's going to give you the latest insights on transcendental meditation, what his perspective is, and kind of give you a guideline. So, Norman, welcome to the Inspire Possibility Show.
Thank you. It's so good to be here.
And we were just talking off air a little bit about meditation and transcendental meditation, and you've written this book, and I asked you, you're a practicing psychiatrist, you told me, in the Maryland area?
Correct, yes. I've got a clinical practice.
And you've been a meditator now for about, what, you said 8 years?
Yes, that's correct.
And so as a clinical psychiatrist, my understanding now in psychiatry, it's a lot different than it used to be, that it's mainly, most psychiatrists is really about, it's not about processing as much as analyzing what a person's condition is and a prescribed medication. Is that more or less where the psychiatric world is in today's world?
Unfortunately so. You know, it's kind of split where the psychiatrists are often ending up as medication managers and the therapy goes to other psychologists, social workers, other kinds of therapists. I've always thought that it's nice to be able to treat the whole patient with everything that he or she needs.
And so do you prescribe meditation to many of the patients in your practice?
I would say about 20% of my patients meditate regularly.
Wow.
I do. And, I do prescribe it.
And so you prescribe meditation and then you have follow-up visits with them to monitor their progress? Is that correct?
Well, you know, as we know, there are teachers out there who are schooled in teaching transcendental meditation, and they have a very specific kind of training, which I do not have. So I will tend to refer people to qualified TM teachers, and then I will be monitoring them for whatever they came to me in the first place. Maybe it's anxiety, maybe it's depression, post-traumatic stress, relationship difficulties. I'll be dealing with them with a number of different modalities. But because of my interest in TM and my knowledge about it, I can say, you know, how is it going? Are you doing it regularly? What's its effect? So it adds a very intriguing and potent element to the treatments that I prescribe.
And do you notice that these people that you prescribe meditation, are they also on medication, antidepressants, anti-anxiety medication?
Sometimes they are, often they are, and sometimes I can actually lower the dose of medication because of their meditation. You've got to make it clear whether you took medication or meditation. I can lower the dose of their meds because of their TM, let's put it that way.
Okay. So what exactly is meditation? How would you describe meditation? I'm just curious, actually, before we get into that, what led you to meditation? You're a practicing psychiatrist, and one day you started to meditate, or how did you, there? I know in my case, I think I shared with you, I've been a meditator for many, many years, and it was an ongoing process to somebody had heard about meditation from, I kept running into people that were in meditation. And where I live in Northern California, it was a lot of people I would run into were in the meditation, and they'd all get a, they keep talking about it. And one day I just decided to do it, which was one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life. But I'm curious, what was going on in your life that led you to this TM practice?
Well, the first time that I learned TM was back, more or less, when you learned TM, was back in the 70s in South Africa. But then, you know, what happened was that I let it slide. I let
Common
it drop
story.
Off my to-do list. I know. And so I let it go for 35 years, if you can believe that. Then I found myself 35 years later in my office face to face with a young man with bipolar disorder. And he said to me, you know, your medicines are helping me, but what's really making me happy is transcendental meditation. And when he heard that I had done that in the past, he nagged me to get back to the practice. And
wow.
That was 8 years ago. He kept after me, he nagged me, and finally I said, well, why not? You know, why not give it a shot?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
he pointed out that I had to do it regularly, because at first I was doing it irregularly, and needless to say,
right.
it wasn't having much benefit. But then I started to do it regularly, and that was what made all the difference. I began to feel the effects in myself, and I was amazed. And then that led me to write the first book, because I realized what an amazing stress relief mechanism it is and how good it is physically for one's health. And so transcendence came about. That was 5 years ago. And I thought I had said the last word on the subject, but I was wrong, because as it happens, the consciousness that you get from your meditation just keeps expanding. So I found myself just becoming more and more aware and getting more and more gifts and benefits from the technique. And so I was impelled to write my new book, Supermind, which talks about how transcendental meditation enables you to just live your fullest. It was a wonderful personal discovery. Of course, I didn't discover it, but everybody who meditates feels like they're coming to it fresh for the first time.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that in your book, you or in the materials your publicist sent me, that you mentioned there's some of the meditators are orienting Arianna Huffington and Hugh Jackman, and then I know that I saw a clip with Jerry Seinfeld and Howard Stern are meditators too. I heard. You know what I'm curious
That's all
about
true.
Is mm-hmm. how huh.
They're all on the record. They're all on the record. It's absolutely true.
Right. And you know what I'm curious about is something that I've always wondered about. I know there was so much research about the benefits of meditation, and a lot of the people that were into transcendental meditation, I know Herbert Benson in the 70s, and he from Harvard, and he still does work on the benefits of meditation, but initially a lot of the benefits of meditation, the studies were based on some of the TM meditation technique. Now I think I suggested to you is that transcendental meditation, they're essentially the technique itself is repeating a word over and over again, a Sanskrit word, which is called the mantra. Now, and then there are other types of meditation where you focus on your breathing. So do you think there's any difference in benefits between the meditation where you focus on your breath as opposed to focusing on the mantra?
Yeah, I do think there are differences. You know, they've never been studied head to head. So, you know, if you say drug A is better than drug B, you have to have a trial where you've treated
mm-hmm.
one group with drug A and one
mm-hmm.
group with drug
mm-hmm.
B and one group with placebo. But that's
mm-hmm.
never been done for meditation. But what we do know is that we're asking people to do different tasks in these different forms of meditation. As you
mm-hmm.
say, in the one
mm-hmm.
form, TM, you're automatically accessing a mantra. In another one, you are open monitoring your breath. And in a third, you're actually focusing on something. Maybe it's a thought of
right.
loving kindness. Maybe it's an image. So these are the three groups that have been defined.
And then
defined.
There's another kind word, too, that you have you focus on your breathing that's associated with the mantra. I know that's
yes,
one technique
well,
then, I used
yeah,
to
that,
do.
I'm sure there are
so I guess my question
variations.
Is, there. You know, the important thing is in transcendental, is there is a word as you in your book, your other book, is in transcendence. It describes this feeling of how would you describe? I mean, I kind of want to you know, this conversation we're having right now, I want to keep going into it, but I would think that this word transcendence that you wrote a book about. How would you isn't the purpose of meditation is to transcend thought?
Absolutely, yes. You know, there are three ordinary states of consciousness: sleeping, waking, and dreaming. And a person mm-hmm. could live their whole life in just those three states of consciousness without mm-hmm. knowing that any other state was there. But the great psychologist, William James, who's a great Western psychologist, said, at a touch, when you apply the requisite stimulus, these other states of consciousness can become accessible to you. And in this instance, the requisite stimulus is TM, and the first state of consciousness occurs within the TM experience. That's conscious state number four, beyond waking, sleeping, and dreaming. That's what we call mm-hmm. transcendence. What that mm-hmm. Is a state where you are alert but calm at the same time. You're conscious, mm-hmm. but there is not necessarily any content to the consciousness. You're not thinking about anything because you've gone to a place deep inside yourself that's very still, very lovely, very peaceful, and that is the transcendence. The boundaries seem to disappear, time and place become irrelevant, and you just have this blissful sense, which has been compared to descending deep into an ocean, where on the surface you might have turbulent waves, but deep down you have calm stillness that's very joyful. And so that's the fourth state of consciousness called transcendence. That is the name of that last book, which, you know, I do recommend because it's a wonderful summary of a lot of, you know, important research
right.
and very poignant anecdotes. But what I've found personally is that this fourth state of consciousness begins to filter into one's daily life so that you are alert and awake and engaged, but at the same time, there's kind of a calm and peaceful sense that abides side by side with this engagement. And that is the supermind that I'm talking about. And so mm-hmm. in the book Supermind,
so how does this state of transcendence different from how you just described supermind? I'm a little unclear about that.
Well, the transcendence is really within the meditation experience. It's while you're
yes.
meditating, you go into this place. But then as you continue to meditate, the great brilliance of the technique is that the state begins to filter into your activity. So you have this mm-hmm. transcendent feeling side by side with activity, and that gives you enormous power. For example,
mm-hmm.
one of the people cited in the book is a friend of mine, the hedge fund owner Ray Dalio, who says that to have this transcendence alongside activity makes him like a ninja in his negotiations
mm-hmm.
because he feels as
mm-hmm.
though things are coming to him in slow motion and he can kind of pick them off one by one. It's as though you're operating on two channels at the same time. The one in which
right.
you are actively engaged, and the other that sits there like a peaceful sense of calm that is unshakable. I'm feeling it right now talking to you. I don't know, maybe it's because you're a meditator as well. But,
uh-huh.
you know, we're actively engaged in a conversation. We're very interested in what we're talking about. But there's a kind of peaceful sense that I just have a sense you know what I'm talking about. It's very funny, actually.
Yes. Norman, I used to be, what was amazing is that, you know, again, this transcendent quality and it kind of gets into your whole being so it changes you, as I remember. But I guess the question I have is that if the idea, you know, through meditation, if we transcend, TM is one way, but there are other ways too, I think. I mean, in terms of the meditation, if the idea is we get this feeling of where we transcend thought into this other realm of consciousness, I think some of the other forms of meditation allow you to get you there. And I think the important thing is that state. And I know that the caveat I have is with some paths, they get a little too much into this is the only way. And what I think is important is that, you know, if people are getting this quality to where they're getting, you know, this transcendent quality and this feeling of super mind, I think if they're feeling that, these other types of meditation, focusing on your breathing or the contemplating a thought, I think it's good to realize, you know what, there's more than one path to get to the top of the mountain. And I think that's really
good. Well, I completely agree with you, and I make that point right up front in Supermind. This is not the only way. However, you know, as a practicing psychiatrist who wants to try to help people in very practical ways,
mm-hmm.
I use the technique that I know that I have
Correct.
Seen in a very simple way lead to very concrete results. So that's the one I recommend, just because that's the one I know in a very reproducible way can lead you to these wonderful outcomes. So that's why I recommend it. But I also have a whole chapter in the book on transcendent surprises, that suddenly out of the blue, some people have these amazing transcendent experiences that go on to transform their lives. However,
so you
as a doctor or
Norman,
a psychiatrist,
can,
yeah.
Can yeah. you kind of get into, I like that title, I like that transcendence. Where I've had a few of those, by the way, I think, where
mm-hmm.
I never knew this feeling of, there's like a sense of oneness where I go beyond that separation of
mm-hmm.
me and somebody else. And I've had them early in my career. I was I was a criminal defense lawyer, and I could be talking to somebody, or I could be in the courtroom, and all of a sudden the energy changed, and I had this feeling of transcending the boundaries between me, the separation between me and another person. And it was such an amazing experience. But as soon as I thought, wow, here's that experience again, I lost it. I got back into my head. And I think what it is transcending our thought, because, you know, as human beings, we're so much in our heads, and this idea of transcending thought to where we're totally, you know, into the experience and now is a very rare experience. And I think that meditation techniques help you experience this momentarily, or even for a second.
Yes, I think so. Well, you know, I think if we do practice something like TM or TM, then we become much more open to these kinds of oceanic experiences, mystical experiences. We aren't afraid of them. You know, we find them rather interesting. We allow ourselves to just enter into them a little bit and see where they take us, because sometimes they are deep sources of inspiration. We see that, for example, in Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now, where he wakes up in the middle of the night and feels this kind of transcendent experience and then goes on to experience a change in consciousness in his daily life. I have the story of an astronaut who, when he sees the satellite circling the Earth again and again, the spacecraft, gets this feeling that we're all part of this huge tapestry, and has this feeling of being part of something much bigger than what he thought. And apparently many astronauts have had that. And then that leads him to changes in feelings in his daily life. So I think there are so many ways that we can get this way. But when I'm as a psychiatrist saying, well, hey, listen, try and access this because it can really help you, I like the fact that I've got a very specific technique that I can recommend, that's taught in a very standardized way by teachers who've been taught in a very thorough fashion. I love the fact that it's available to people, and that I can recommend it, and that I can talk from a personal knowledge, and also one that has been enriched by my clinical practice.
So Norman, how do people get at your book?
Oh, they can
That's
get it
That's a big question.
Anywhere.
They go, hey, this sounds great, but how do I get his book?
Well, firstly, do visit me on my website, which is my name, normanrosenthal.com. My book, Supermind, is available on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, anywhere that books are sold. And you might want to check out transcendence as well. But of course, you know, the latest child always gets the most attention. And so Supermind is very much on my mind and on my heart. I have been so heartwarmed by people's responses, because we all have this sense that we could be much more than what we are, and that we want to make the best of ourselves. And I think this is a pathway to that, super person that is inside all of us, just waiting to experience. And to you for having me on your radio show. It's been really delightful.
Well, when I saw your book and the email from your publicist, I was excited, because I go, wow, here's somebody that has written a book. There used to be a lot more books on transcendental meditation, but I haven't really seen any for quite some time, and I've actually read most of them. So when they say, hey, would you like a book? I go, great, I'd love to read books on TM, and I've you know, like I say, there used to be a lot more written. And, you know, I meditated for many years, and I got my mother into it, and my mother began to meditate too. And I just find it's just something like that to have. You know, actually, it's any spiritual practice that somebody has that they do regularly. I always, because I've been asked at times throughout my life to talk about meditation, and so a lot of people always ask me, or when I give a program, because in the work I do, I sometimes will give a program on the positive side of change, and I do talk about meditation, about living from the center, and quite often people will say to me, what's the best way to meditate? And I say, you know, I don't think it matters. What matters is that you do it.
Well, I love that thought, yeah. You know, as you said yourself,
you started 35 years ago or 40 years ago in the 70s, but then you stopped doing it. And so many people I know started with TM, and then they stopped. They stopped for whatever reason.
I asked the young man who put me onto TM, I said, what made you so persistent? What made you nag me so to do it? He said, I thought that if you did TM, if you did it, you would be in a position to help a lot of other people. And that was very wonderful, far-sighted words.
Wow.
Because I have him to thank for transcendence and supermind, because he put me on that track. And that, I think, is so wonderful to have your ears open and your eyes open to the universe when it speaks to you. And so I agree with you. And they asked the philosopher Spinoza one time, what's the best religion? And he said, any religion that leads to a good way of life. And I would say the same for meditation. Any meditation that transforms you and makes you feel fulfilled and enriches your life, it must be a good meditation. For me, TM has done that, and that's why I have been inspired to write these books.
Well, thank you for, first of all, being a guest on the Inspire Possibility Show. I feel inspired. I hope, and I'm sure our listeners do. And I also know that, being an author myself, that how much dedication and how much work and commitment and just follow through goes into writing a book. Because you know, when you say things that are written down, you know other people are going to read them, and you want to be sure what you're saying is accurate and what you strongly believe, because you don't want to, especially in your situation that you're a psychiatrist, and I think that you know, you're scrutinized by other people, and you wanted to make sure that what you felt was medically, and I know you're a researcher, is true to the best of your knowledge, and also you care about people. You're committed to helping people, and I know there are many studies, and I'm sure this is part of your book, where it talks about how when a number of meditators meditate in a certain area, you know, people change. I mean, they used to say there were studies that, you know, the crime rate goes down, the divorce rate goes down, all these kind of things. And I know they've said that. I have questions sometimes with the research, But it's the idea, as you said in this conversation, when two meditators talk to each other, there's the potential for a different type of conversation.
Well, I think that's true. And I think that even if you don't about things happening on some kind of physical level with a universal field and complex physical explanations, the more good people do, the more you meditate, the better a person you're going to be. I'm just convinced of that. You're going to be less easy to anger. You're going to be putting out positive energy. And what happens? Other people respond to that. They respond in a positive way. I have a whole chapter in the new book called The Support of Nature. When people meditate, they experience the world as being more supportive, more loving, more contributory. But I think what's really happening is that because you're becoming a nicer person, people are nicer to you. And so you have this sort of force field of goodness that follows you. Not always. I mean, there's going to be bad stuff that happens to anybody. But statistically, you just get more breaks because people respond to that quality that meditation induces in you.
Well, again, Norman, I want to thank you for being on the Inspire Possibility Show. To remind our listeners that you've been listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, today's guest was Dr. Norman Rosenthal, the author of Supermind and the New York Times best-selling book Transcendence. You can get these books on Amazon or your local bookstore or BarnesandNoble.com. So, again, until next week, journey on when we'll have another great guest, and I look forward to tuning in with you then. And thanks again, Norman, for being on our show, and hope to have you back.
It's been a great pleasure. I look forward to chatting again. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. 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 Imagine the possibilities.